in this match.
If it's a war, you can say whatever you want.
I thought it was a cult. I didn't know what was going on.
The Fed did. I think New York did.
One of your executive vice presidents loves that company.
It's the first ever finishing move that's exclusive to a promotion.
Advantage.
And we're back after a week off
due to the reasons.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, before this pandemic started, we never missed a single show in 2 years, and I think we've missed like three during this pandemic.
Yeah, but not for just the sake of not doing them. There was reasons behind them,
of course, you know.
So it has been 2 weeks since I've seen you. How are you?
Nothing changes, dude. It's all the same shit.
Except division leaders and football teams. Fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hey, if y'all take care of business tonight, and by the time this comes out, we'll know if it happened or not. We're still in first place.
Yeah, that's
good. But Seahawks are probably going
to... To be honest with you, we have to win one eventually.
See, I was hoping that, you know, since your team didn't play it, you wouldn't bring out football this week, but you did anyway.
It's just Monday. It's all I talk about. Football is like my half of my life.
It's true. I mean, there's not much, especially with basketball being delayed.
Yeah, I can't watch the Sixers, who are a great team.
We'll see.
I'll tell you, you guys snuck out, but we'll talk about that off air. I don't know.
I can't believe we got that trade exception.
That's the most ridiculous thing. That should not happen after the fact.
Danny Ainge, man, he's the
GOAT.
That
should not happen after the fact. That is bullshit.
Why?
It's bullshit.
Why? They couldn't legally do anything until they had decided what they're doing with Batum, and they didn't decide what they're doing with Batum until yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we didn't sign
nonsense.
We didn't sign Tristan yet because we couldn't officially.
Someone gives somebody a horrible contract and you get $27 million in cap space because of it.
It is kind of they're paying like 100 because they still have to pay Batum because they cut him. They're paying like $147 million to sign Hayward for $120 million.
God,
Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
But anyway. We're here to talk the graps.
We are here to talk.
Not the hoops, not the gridiron.
The king sport. Sport of kings, wrestling.
Yeah, so.
Not a lot's happened this week, so it's going to be a little different module show. We really wanted to have the Undertaker conversation last week, but due to reasons in the world we live in right now.
Contact tracing.
We could not get together. But we are here now, and we'll talk about our world famous war report. We'll talk about the War Games pay-per-view happening Sunday for NXT, and we will go for both analytically and as fans speaking of The Undertaker.
I thought you said we were going to go for a ride. A last ride.
But that would have been better if I said it.
I was about to give you your flowers.
That would have been better if I said that.
Then you just mumbled some nonsense.
So. Yeah, well, that's what I do. If you could describe me in two words, it's mumbled
typical
nonsense.
Typical millennial talking about analytics.
Yeah, yeah.
You should go work for AEW. They love their analytics.
What I'm saying, yeah, they do?
Yeah. I mean, records and rankings.
Yeah, but they mean, no, that's a different, never mind. Not getting into that right now. But my point was, we're going to talk about it as what we do here and as fans of The Undertaker, because that's two different things, correct?
So what you said is you're going to be a mark about Mark, but then you're also going to try and find what his place in history is.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. See, this is why you're the number one.
Marking about Mark.
Yep.
Since 1990.
Since I was in my father's balls.
Didn't need that added, but...
Yeah, it's true. But coming up next, we'll talk a little AEW and NXT, and we will see you then.
Stay tuned. And so we are here with the War Report this week.
A little earlier than usual.
Yeah, there wasn't... We decided to just hop right into the deep end of the pool this week. As always, we'll start with All Elite Wrestling's presentation of Wednesday Night Dynamite.
For alphabetical services only.
Services? Alphabetical services? The fuck does that mean?
I don't know.
The opener. Adam Page taking on John Silver. John Silver started by cutting a pre-recorded promo saying, Dark Order is going to get a win tonight. You know why? Because Johnny... I'm not even gonna say.
Just don't say it, because I would.
I was going to, and then
I would have punched you, and I watched it.
I like John Silver, though.
I do too, but don't ruin him like you're ruining everybody else.
What does that mean?
He's gonna be the star of that group, and they have him saying things like "hungy."
You just said it, Johnny Hungy.
I hate it. I hate it so much, but that's okay. I like him, so it's not gonna be a problem for me.
So Silver was kind of taunting early, showing off his arms, mocking Hangman. Hangman responded by forearming him in the face.
Very hardly, by the way.
Yeah. Silver continued acting like a asshole, which is what he does really well. Tony Schiavone pointed out that Hangman came to the ring without a beverage. That's the thing that's still going on.
Why? Well, that they should have dumped that a while ago. Could you agree with that?
Dumped that? No, I see what you did there.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I did do that.
I did that. I don't know. I'm just like, I just wanted to, if they're going to keep doing it, I'd at least like it to develop.
Yeah, do something with it. Like, he's been holding a whiskey forever. Not even drinking because he's lightweight.
So Paige fired up, built momentum, standing shooting star, Samoan drop. Goes for the buckshot, but Silver counters. Hurricane Rana roll up, two count. Brainbuster for another near fall. Silver goes for a lariat of his own, but gets countered with some kicks. Liger bomb, buckshot lariat. Paige wins. It's a good match.
You're fine. Good, solid opener.
Yeah.
They really got to figure out what they're doing with Paige, though.
You could argue it went a little long, but...
Yeah. I can argue every single one of their matches goes a little long. I'm just so used to it by now. Hopefully they do something with Paige, especially after what could happen this coming Wednesday.
Well, they have been teasing Paige to the Dark Order since, like, July.
Yeah. So, and then it kind of... They can't do that. I don't think that'll bury him 7 feet under the ground. But I just... Hopefully with the events coming up tomorrow, that Paige can take a jump in his character.
So up next, we have Lee Johnson taking on the newly renamed Powerhouse Hobbs.
Tazman.
Taz is awesome.
Taz is phenomenal.
Taz is the best
we'll
part
make fun of him in a little
bit. Taz is the best part of these shows.
I'm going to make fun of him about a couple minutes here, but we will. He has been great.
So, of course, Powerhouse Hobbs is the former Will Hobbs. I don't know why he couldn't just be Powerhouse Will Hobbs. He has to just be Powerhouse Hobbs.
Or Will Powerhouse Hobbs.
I guess they thought Will was a shitty name. But, all right. I didn't get to say this last week, but I do owe AEW a little bit of an apology. We were laughing hysterically when Will Hobbs was so late with the save, but now it makes sense because he was in Taz's pocket anyway. So
it's still funny.
It is funny, dude.
That homie.
The heel's already in the tunnel, and Will Hobbs like, I got a chair, man. Who wants some? Who wants some in this chair?
You know what? That was good now thinking about it.
It was, yeah.
But they don't deserve the credit to do it, so it's fine with me. Good. I'm glad. I like Will Hobbs a lot.
And I assume it was intentional because he was so, like, there. It was beyond missing a cue. Yeah. Like, we were at the next segment already, and Will Hobbs is out there with a chair.
But no, I like it. I think he's great, and I think putting him with Taz is phenomenal.
Yeah, because that's really his one weakness. He can't talk at this stage.
Yeah, and he will get there. He looks different than everybody else there.
Yeah.
And I think he has a really, really bright future in ahead of him.
What do you make of his ring gear resembling Taz in ECW?
I love it.
It's a great touch.
I love it.
He comes out with like the Mike Tyson like black towel.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's an excellent touch. I'm happy you noticed it because I did too.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So that's obviously what they're going for, right?
I would assume so.
If not, they should go for it.
So he squashed Lee Johnson, and then Taz. This was kind of like the Jade Cargill segment a few weeks ago. I was like, because it was good, but it was weird, and there were parts of it that weren't good, but it was another mesmerizing segment. So Taz starts talking. He's pissed off that the FTW championship isn't recognized by management. So they cut off his mic.
It's his own title.
He takes Justin Roberts' mic. He starts talking. They cut off that mic. He then goes, I'm going to go over to the commentator's table because I know they can't turn off those mics. And I'm like, what is he talking about? Yes, they can.
I don't know. They do it different. They have records and stuff.
Eventually, Cody Rhodes came out representing management. And he's still wearing his headset.
Like that touch.
But it's weird, though, because, like, I don't know. I guess wrestling fans are too, like, I don't mind them. It's weird that they're acknowledged as vice presidents, but yet they still follow the same rules everyone else does. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and I'll tell you something. And when we get to the next part of this, I'll tell you something that makes them even more nerdy.
Okay. Well, moving on. I don't know. It's not that I disliked it. I just thought it was weird.
It was just a weird, strange. It was strange.
Like, I wish they would have an authority figure that's not Tony Khan.
Yeah. No, they should. They should absolutely. That's.
And it's nothing against Tony Khan, but it's like, the dude never appears in the show. They just say, Tony Khan made this match. Tony Khan made that match.
They need a face.
And I don't think Tony, and I think Tony Khan doesn't appear on the show because he knows he wouldn't be good in that role.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that he recognizes that. But instead of just, like, being the mystery ghost face authority figure, just, like, get a legend to be Jake. You have so many fucking legends. And, like, Archer, does Archer really need Jake as a manager? Can't Jake be the GM?
Well, you know, Jerry putting Jake in charge of anything.
Well, and, I mean, he wouldn't really be in charge.
I guess.
All right, anyway, moving on. So Cody comes out. Cody says, next week, winter is coming. Never watch a show. Don't know what that means. You kind of explained it to me, but you're still speaking French because I don't...
Watch Game of Thrones.
I don't have time.
You do.
I don't.
You do.
I watch TV 8 hours a day at work. I don't want to go home and watch TV.
That's fair.
Like, I... So then Rhodes asked Taz, if he's so dominant and he's so good, then why is his own son training with him instead of his father? And that pissed Taz off very much.
It pissed him off so much that Taz had to lightly put Cody in a chokehold.
Taz, I guess you could say, applied the Taz mission. And he left with his son Hook carrying the FTW title out of the arena.
Just awesome. You know what's funny about this? How nerdy they are?
What?
Literally the fucking plot of Cobra Kai. Literally the plot of Cobra Kai. I don't know if you've ever seen...
I haven't, but...
The Karate Kid?
I've seen The Karate Kid.
But Johnny's son is training with Daniel.
Didn't a new series just come out, though?
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Okay, like, I haven't seen that.
It should suck. If that makes any sense.
No, I know what you're saying.
Like,
yeah.
Like I gave that show
The Cameron Grimes Dexter Loomis segments. Yeah. They should suck.
No, because those are bad, but we like them anyway.
Okay.
It's a legitimate good show.
So it's like, okay.
Like remakes like that don't work ever.
Yeah.
And it's a legitimately good show. But I could see Cody liking it a lot.
Cody liked that a lot?
Yeah, but this is it's the exact entire second season of Cobra Kai is what happened in this fucking in this segment. Taz's son's name is Hook.
That's awesome.
I hope Cody comes out dressed like Peter Pan next week.
Stop it. It's not Captain Hook. It's just Hook. He's not a captain yet.
I mean, he can get there.
He can eventually.
Taz makes his own titles, literally. Why not name his son Captain? I swear to God, if they have Captain fucking Hook.
I don't think they will.
Or Red Hook.
Red Hook is a possibility.
Do you think Taz calls him Red?
Maybe he calls him Texas Red, like JR is called The Undertaker. Or Booger Red.
Oh, my God. That's a horrible name.
Up next, Top Flight versus the Hybrid 2. Of course, Top Flight had their breakout match with the Young Bucks a few weeks ago. This week, they're taking on your favorite tag team of Angelico and Jack Evans.
Just terrible. Why the fuck did they lose?
Who?
Top Flight.
I guess they're going with, like, the scrappy underdog deal.
But they lost to a shitty team. Who's shitty in kayfabe and out of kayfabe?
Their gear's shitty, I can tell you that. I hate their gear.
I hate them.
I don't hate them, I hate their gear.
Their gear is a big part of it, because I hate that too. Hate that too.
So they have a decent match. Evans takes out Darius at ringside, and Angelico makes Dante tap out. And when Angelico refused to break the hold, the Young Bucks made the save, repaying the favor from a few weeks ago, and TH2 runs off. I don't know. It was fine.
Yeah.
Top Flight lost, but they got a lot of offense in. They were kind of spotlighted. I didn't necessarily hate it. It was just kind of
I just don't like the Hybrid too.
I could tell. Speaking of people you don't like, Chris Jericho.
I like Chris Jericho.
Teams up with Jake Hager.
Don't like him.
That's kind of the one I was going for. Take on SCU. So this was the first time that Jericho and Daniels ever squared off.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like an anomaly.
Not really.
I guess
Jericho was in the WWE for 20
years. They were two stalemates of wrestling for 20 years.
They're just never in the same place.
Just like wrestling is so, I'm not going to say that diagrammed, that you think they'd cross paths at one point.
But Jericho has squared off with a Daniel several times. That Daniels just happens to be Jack.
No, he's not cool enough to drink Jack Daniels.
Thought you like Jericho.
I do, but he's not cool enough to drink.
He's a rock star.
He's too fat. He needs to lose the calories.
So that means you can't drink Jack Daniels either.
I don't need to lose the calories for the look.
Excuse me?
Excuse me? Anyway. Jericho needs to drink vodka or his tits are going to fall off his shirt. He doesn't even wear his shirt anymore.
Well, you do own the same blazer as him.
We do.
Maybe you should walk around shirtless wearing just that blazer.
You want me to? I'll put it on right now.
I'll pass.
Okay.
So Daniels and Kazarian, they isolate Jericho. They outquick him, hit a double stomp. Hager gets a tag, and that turns the tide over to the Inner Circle. He overpowers both men, punishes Kazarian in the corner. Santana trips Kazarian up at ringside to allow Hager to continue his dominance. Daniels comes in, Inner Circle beats down him. They go to break. Come back, heels continue to work over Daniels. He makes a hot tag to Kazarian, makes his comeback. Daniels tags back in, wipes out Hager with a tope, gets a near fall off a crossbody on Jericho. Hits a BME on Hager. MJF interferes, hits Daniels with the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Jericho hits the Judas Effect elbow strike, and Hager gets the victory.
I really like this match.
Yeah, it was a good match.
Very good.
Probably the best match in the show.
Best match in the show, second best match of the night.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I mean, I know what NXT match you liked better. I was trying to think if there's anything else in NXT that was probably better than this, and you're probably right. Probably second.
Yeah, this was good. I have no complaints about this. If they gave me more of this and less of this other shit coming up next, it'd be fine.
Up next, the contract signing for Mox and Kenny. Of course, they tried to do this a couple weeks ago, but Mox is found laid out and unable to sign the contract. So Justin Roberts does his usual Kenny Omega introduction, Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, Sports Illustrated Wrestler of the Year, broke the 5-star scale 7 times. He once worked out in a gym in North Carolina.
I hate that so much, which I think is the point.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that.
But the problem is nobody else hates it that much.
They're not going to hate anything they do. Which is a problem. I'm sorry. That'll be a problem.
I did love the visual of, like, Kenny's behind his little curtain gimmick, and then you just see, like, Moxley's shadow come up and start beating the shit out of him. I thought that was a great visual. I like that a lot. So then he kicks his ass in the ring, gives him a paradigm shift on the world title. He says, "I don't know who you hired to take me out last week, but they did a piss-poor job. I thought we settled our differences a year ago, but then you had to go ahead and piss me off."
The only differences they settled a year ago is how bad their fucking match was.
Moxley then said, "Win, lose, or draw, winter is coming for you, Kenny. Steady your aim and take your shot because you only get one."
They're really hammering that in, aren't they?
So if I never watch, what are the odds of Moxley has ever watched Game of Thrones?
He has. He's tweeted about it. Him and Renee.
Renee might have. Moxley might have watched it, but I guarantee you he never tweeted about it.
I know there's video, there's pictures of him and Renee watching.
Maybe. All right.
You're the only person who hasn't watched
Game of Thrones. No, I know many people haven't watched
Game of Thrones. Name one.
Half my coworkers. I mean, they might be 65, but...
Well, they're lost.
I don't know. It just doesn't do anything for me.
But it doesn't do anything for me either, that genre. And it's just phenomenal.
Apparently it does something for you. You're defending it pretty hard over
because
here.
Because it's that good. I'll die in the Game of Thrones hill till I die.
Better than Breaking Bad.
Equally. Equal. Same tier. If you said one was better than the other, I wouldn't argue, if that makes any sense.
Those are bold words.
Same tier. Same tier as Breaking Bad.
Oof.
I think Breaking Bad has the slight edge, but if you said Game of Thrones, I would not be offended.
Okay, fair enough. Were you offended by Hikaru Shida taking on Anna Jay?
A little bit.
So this is Anna Jay's first match on Dynamite was against Shida. And this time she has an opportunity to take the women's title from her. The Dark Order watched on from the stage. Jay has control early. She works in the lower limbs of Shida. They go to break. They come back, and Shida is working a headlock. Jay drops Shida and ordered Ty Conti to get her a steel chair. Jay caught Shida in the leg with a kendo stick and then applied her Queen Slayer submission hold. Shida fought out, almost lost to a roll-up, but then escaped and delivered a straight jacket suplex and then for a near fall. And then the Tamashii and got a win. After the match, Abaddon appeared. She crawled. She licked the world title with her bloody mouth. And she looked scared.
I thought she was injured.
She was.
She was? I thought it was more serious than it was.
That was the match that they taped for Dynamite, but she got hurt bad, so they couldn't air it.
Yeah, why is she back already, though?
It was like 4 months ago.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was like June.
Fuck.
That was like June.
That would have been October.
No. Maybe it wasn't June. Maybe it was like August.
All right.
It was a while.
Good to see her back. I like her.
Yeah.
She's nice.
She's different.
Yeah.
Different's good.
That's what they need. They need things.
Up next, Pac and Rey Fénix taking on The Butcher and The Blade. So.
The Bunny.
a week, of course, Death Triangle reunited a week ago, and now they are in the main event against the Butcher and the Blade with the Bunny, as you spoke. Eddie Kingston watched on. Butcher and Blade get physical early, attacking their opponents on the stage. Pac and Phoenix answered, and they built momentum for themselves. I don't know how I felt about this. Four heels. I guess I'm guess Pac's still a heel. I mean, he's called the Bastard.
Yeah.
Are there babyface bastards? I guess Hornswoggle. Hornswoggle was a bastard.
He was.
He's a little bastard.
He's babyface though.
Yeah.
Got a giant pop at the Saudi Rumble.
He did. Saudis love Hornswoggle. So Phoenix turns the tide, and they work over the Butcher for a big portion of the match. The Blade tags in, and Pac also gets a tag. He takes the fight to the Blade, goes up top for a splash, but the Blade rolls out of the way, catches Pac with a power slam. Butcher re-entered and hit a huge lariat.
Oh my god, he fucking killed him.
Followed up by a doctor bomb by the Blade for another near fall. The action broke down. Bunny distracts the ref. Eddie Kingston crotches Phoenix. Butcher and Blade capitalize and get the victory, and they stood tall. Kingston delivers a DDT to Pac in a steel chair, and then Lance Archer made the save.
That's quadrilateral.
I'm interested to see where this goes. I don't know if Archer is turning or if he's just a man that likes kicking everybody's ass. We'll have to see where it goes. I don't know. Interesting show.
Yeah, not bad. They've done worse, so.
So, what do you think is happening? What does this winter coming means? You've watched Game of Thrones. I haven't.
I more or less think it means nothing.
Okay.
They're just for some reason, doing it.
Turner owns HBO, right?
I don't know that for a fact.
I think they do. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Because weren't they saying that Dark might be on HBO Max? Wasn't that like a conversation for a little while?
But HBO Max is a little different than...
I'm assuming HBO Max is owned by the people who own HBO.
Yeah, well, maybe. I honestly don't know if Turner owns
it or not. What do you mean, maybe?
Well, Turner owns AT&T, right?
I'm about to Google.
AT&T owns...
Warner Media owns HBO, which is who owns Turner.
Yeah. So it's not Turner. It's the company that owns Turner.
Yes, but it's still...
Yeah, okay, we're talking in circles. But yeah, so I guess
you're talking in circles. I'm not.
I guess that's where they get the name from. I just more or less think it means nothing in promoting a show, which is fine. It's wrestling at its finest, but...
See, normally I'd agree, but they're like really hammering that home.
Well, what could it be?
I don't know. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't know what it could
but
be.
But I know, like, Winter is Coming is like the words of House Stark, which means the Army of the Dead and winter, actual winter is coming.
Well, I mean,
maybe... So, like, it's a week that's 2 weeks before winter, so winter technically is coming when they put out the show. All right.
Well,
so I think it could mean nothing, and they're just...
I don't know.
I hope it means something. They could use a little jump. They could use a shot in the arm, but I don't think it's going to mean anything.
All right, well, let's go to NXT now.
Time for the black and yellow brand.
Kevin Owens is on commentary, and the opener is Ember Moon taking on Candice LeRae, accompanied by Indy Hartwell. So Candice is in control early, keeps whispering orders to Indy to help her. Ember Moon comes back, slams LeRae, and LeRae attempts to walk out, but Moon goes after her. And then LeRae sneaks a cheap shot and gets the advantage on the outside. Slams and clotheslines to Moon. Moon begins the rally, but Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez arrive. This allowed LeRae to lock Moon into the Gargano escape. Ember Moon escapes, and then Hartwell eats an eclipse. Then LeRae hits a super kick into the Wicked Stepsister curb stomp for the win. Afterwards, Ember Moon tries to escape the 3-on-1 assault. Toni Storm comes down, seemingly to make the save, but she ends up turning on Ember Moon and aligning with the heels.
That was an interesting move.
Yeah.
But I guess if you're going to have... They're breaking tropes a little bit, in a good way. But I think they're going for... Usually people that look like Rhea are going to be the heels, and people that look like Toni are going to be the baby faces. So they just switched them.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that.
But I don't know. I don't think
NXT...
Do you like the move?
I mean, Toni Storm was kind of not doing anything as a babyface. I don't think it's... You're going to do something with her. Sure, I'm fine with it.
That's fair.
But she looks like a star. She should be a star. And if turning her heel is a way to get there... I mean, they have a babyface champion, and I guess they could have did babyface Storm versus babyface EO, but...
They needed a heel.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't think Rhea's turning heel anytime soon. So
no, she's a goddamn superstar.
Yeah, I forget who said it. A wrestling reviewer, like ourselves, said she's a star before she gets to the fucking ring.
Yeah,
and then I that's true, but I don't remember who it was. But yeah, she could be a good foil for Rhea.
Up next, Legado del Fantasma have a backstage segment talking about bringing the Cruiserweight division from Afterthoughts to Takeover. Santos Escobar is not worried about any challenger, even Kurt Stallion.
Better than the Adonis.
I don't know why you hate him so much.
I hate the word the. Why is his name the? The only the I care about is the Stallion.
Megan?
Yeah. She got shot.
She did get shot.
By Jeezy, right?
No. Tory Lanez.
Or Tory Lanez.
Jeezy!
I confuse those two all the time.
Jeezy! The fuck you pull Jeezy from?
I don't know. Yeah, she got shot by Tory Lanez.
I mean, you're not wrong. You were wrong when you said Jeezy, but you're not wrong now. So I don't know. I don't know what that has to do with anything.
I don't know. I don't like the name The. I just think it's stupid.
Maybe Kurt Stallion should be Kurt The Stallion.
Maybe Kurt should be Curtis Stallion.
Maybe Kurt should be Kurt Cobain.
That'd really blow. But all right.
That's awful. That's awful.
Continue.
Undisputed Era show up. They say they are not dead, but they give credit to McAfee and his group for giving them a taste of what they've been doing to other people for years. They debate who is going to face Pete Dunne in the ladder match, but Kyle O'Reilly says it has to be him, and the Undisputed Era all agree, and the match is made for the main event.
Good shit.
Okay, I was waiting for you to have thoughts.
I thought you were going to have another sentence to say, but no, good shit. Glad to have them all back together. They're the best thing NXT's ever done, and I would like them to continue.
Timothy Thatcher's students watch on backstage as Thatcher is set to take on Kushida. Kushida and Thatcher trade submissions. Thatcher traps Kushida's legs in the ropes until the referee forced to break. They brawl, very technical match, a lot of catch wrestling, chain wrestling, submission wrestling. They countered each other's submissions back and forth. Kushida sent Thatcher to the floor after blocking a sleeper attempt. And then slammed his left arm onto the steel of the ramp. Kushida got caught with an underhook suplex. Ciampa, who was sitting at ringside during this entire match, stood up. This distracted Thatcher for some reason, allowing Kushida to lock in the hoverboard lock. And Kushida tapped out.
No, Thatcher tapped out.
Yes. Well, I don't think Kushida would tap out to the hoverboard lock.
Yeah. But this rolled.
It did, but it was stupid.
It was. It was, but the match ruled.
The booking of Thatcher has blown my mind.
I think they don't know what to do with him. Although Ciampa and Thatcher will
roll. Oh, yeah, it'll be a good match. But I don't... I didn't mind the August Gray thing where he got the better of Thatcher, but it never went anywhere, so now I do mind it. And I don't know. Like, I don't mind Thatcher losing, especially on a distraction from Ciampa. But there's no way in hell he should have tapped out.
No.
And I know they're getting Kushida ready for Balor. It's pretty much confirmed that that's the direction now. But there's other people he could beat than that. I agree.
I don't get it either.
And I get, but from the same token, I get that Thatcher's a somebody and you don't want Kushida beating nobodies on his way to the title shot.
Yeah, it's just this weird wrestling things. I'm with you, though. I think it didn't happen.
I wouldn't have done it. That's all I'll say.
I wouldn't have either.
The way I went.
You're right.
But, yeah, the match was awesome. Don't get me wrong. The match was really, really good.
Thatcher could have a fucking good match with this glass in front of me, though.
Up next, the Kevin Owens show. I don't know. Did you feel...
Did you hate this as much as I did?
Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page here. So, Leon Ruff's the guest. He steps in the ring, the NFC with the North American Championship, of course. KO tries to build up his confidence. But then Leon Ruff makes a mistake of saying Johnny Gargano's name. And Kevin Owens said, "Don't you know, anytime you say someone's name, they come out and his music will hit in 3, 2, 1. And then, of course, Gargano's music plays. Kevin Owens offers Gargano a chair. Gargano throws a chair. Then Kevin Owens pulls in another chair. And Gargano tells Owens, "I told you I didn't want a chair." And he says, "No, I'm sure I'm going to need it in a second." And then Gargano says Damian Priest's name. Kevin Owens says, "See, I told you I'd need this chair. Because every time you say someone's name, they come out and his music will hit in 3, 2, 1. And then Priest's music hits. Then he comes out. And then the three start bickering. And then Kevin Owens says, "If only we had our own version of Teddy Long to come out and make a triple threat match." And then Regal's music hits. And Regal comes out and announces that at War Games, it'll be Ruff versus Gargano versus Priest for the title at TakeOver War Games. So that was the whole segment. It was...
I have no idea to say about it. It was just dumb. I have no idea why it was there. And Owens is great, but they're going to figure a way to ruin Damian Priest. They're going to figure out a way to do it. It seems like he was booked amazingly for the last year until this fucking mess.
I mean, I really don't think... What's happened to him that's bad?
I don't know. He's just caught in this nonsense.
But I mean, it's not like he lost the title to Ruff.
No, you're right. But I just think this is nonsense.
I'm not... So, all right. 3 weeks into Ruff's reign. What do you think of it?
Shouldn't be this long.
See, I've kind of done a 180 on it.
Have you?
Because I thought that...
Well, Ruff, he's for sure losing his son, mate.
So. I thought Ruff was just going to win it, and then he was just going to lose it. But now it appears they're trying to make something of him, which I say, okay, I could buy this. There's two ways you could go, and I think either of them can be really, really good. He could either be like, A, the scrappy underdog that always figures out a way to pull it out, like a la 1-2-3 Kid beating
Spike
Razor.
Spike Dudley, Drake Maverick.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
Or two, he could be like the overly cocky heel that keeps like getting these cheap wins where he did no work and acting, because he's kind of showing shades of that.
I think I like two better.
Yeah. And like kind of like what Sami Zayn's doing, except less believable than Sami Zayn.
Yeah, like Owen Hart used to do, but he's not Owen Hart. But he's not Owen Hart.
Which makes it even better.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's kind of what it is, right?
Yeah, and I think I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, I think that'd be the better choice of the two of them.
And I think that's kind of what they're going with. So I just thought, like, I thought the story was more about Johnny Gargano losing than Leon Ruff winning, and that's why I hated it at first. But it appears that there actually is a little bit of a story here with Leon Ruff. So I like it, and I'm very curious to see what happens Sunday. Like, I don't think I'm going to pick him when we do predictions, but I would not be shocked if Leon Ruff retained. Like, Gargano and Balor have, like, a double down somehow, and Ruff just pins one of them. Preferably Gargano. Hopefully yeah. Gargano. So, like, I don't know. I don't think I hate it anymore.
Yeah, we'll see after Sunday. That'll be a big telling point.
But you're still not a fan of the Leon Ruff
run. I'm not a fan, if that makes any sense.
I don't know. I just want to rant about how somehow Damian Priest is ruined.
I didn't say he's ruined. I said they're going to figure out a way how to ruin him if he's just stuck with this too long.
I don't know. Up next, Cameron Grimes versus Jake Atlas. Poor Jake Atlas.
Yeah, poor guy.
I don't know what they're doing with this guy. He was just in a Cruiserweight title match like 2 weeks ago, and now he's doing just jobs to Cameron Grimes, who doesn't beat anybody. And I love Cameron Grimes. So he beats Atlas in fairly quick fashion with the cave-in. Loomis arrives, shows videos of Grimes running away constantly. William Regal makes a strap match between the two for TakeOver.
If anybody looks like they need to be in a strap match, it's Sam Shaw / Dexter Loomis.
So Rhea Ripley comes out. Before that, LaRae's backstage introduces her team for War Games. It is herself, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and, of course, Toni Storm. Rhea Ripley puts over Io Shirai. She says that she is not going anywhere. She knows there's been rumors about her leaving NXT, but she says she is not going anywhere, and the NXT Women's Championship is still on her mind. LaRae and her squad interrupt. They say they are carrying Io Shirai, and they storm the ring and appear to be getting ready to take out Ripley. LaRae and her team explain that the heels will hurt anyone in their way of victory. And she announced that Gonzalez will take on Shotzi Blackheart next week for the advantage. Then Gargano arrived, and he says he got the car. He, LaRae, Indy Hartwell, and I told you tried fucking arguing with me at Halloween Havoc. I told you there were two ghost faces. I want my apology.
No.
I apologize, you son of a bitch.
Nope.
I want my apology.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. So there is a second ghost face, and I saw your little slick move there. I don't care.
Okay.
I'm sure it's Austin Theory.
Has to be, right?
I mean, who else would it be?
I don't know. Has to be, but it didn't look that big. Austin Theory's a tall guy.
You're sitting in a car.
To be honest with you, it also does not have to be him.
No, I'm not saying it should be him. I just think it probably will be
him. No, I'm saying it doesn't have to be him, even if it turns out to be him.
Yeah,
like, the person in
I get what you're saying.
Gargano's car did not have to be Austin Theory.
I don't see
for
how
still
you,
a reveal to be Austin Theory.
I don't see how you could say he didn't look that big when he's sitting in a fucking car.
I could be wrong. I'm wrong often.
Up next, Xia Li and Boa were forced into a car. Speaking of cars, a lot of cars on this show. They were driven to meet the old man. They also met a woman who has to be Karen Q.
Yeah, I think so.
Don't know who else it could be at this point.
I think so.
Then the worst part of the show, our boy Ever-Eyes, they're in the ring. They're getting ready for action. When all of a sudden they're attacked by the grizzled young vets, James Drake and Zach Gibson.
I liked you motherfuckers, and you take out the goats?
Exactly.
I loved them.
Although, the backstage segment with them and Kevin Owens is probably the best thing I've ever seen.
They should be a trio.
3-0.
They should be a trio.
But seriously, it is great to have the grizzled young vets back. They're a great tag team.
They are. But even though they flew too close to the sun.
Did you hear what the rumor is that they're having to do to get, like, Tony Storm and all these people in from overseas? Apparently they're flying them to Mexico, then getting them in from Mexico.
Jesus Christ, they're contraband.
Because you can't... Well, they're not... There's not a travel ban on Mexico. Yeah. There's a travel ban in the UK. So they fly them into Mexico, and then they fly from Mexico to Florida.
I guess that's fair.
But it's like, that's a lot of work to bring in Zach Gibson and James Drake. They got Pete Dunne back, though, so...
Yeah, they got Pete Dunne, but they all came in the same plane. What are you talking about?
Well, I don't think they all came in the same plane because Ever-Rise. Grizzly Young Vets didn't show up for like 3 weeks until after Pete Dunne.
Maybe they had a quarantine.
Well, then wouldn't Pete Dunne have not showed up until the same week?
Pete Dunne doesn't give a fuck.
Pete Dunne doesn't give a fuck. He kicked the door into a man's face. Ever-Rise, though.
Yeah.
How are they not the tag champs?
Or went out to the homies. How are they not the world heavyweight and universal champs?
I just want Matt Martell to hold every title in the business.
I want Matt Martell to cut a 12-minute promo on Raw.
If we had to pick two guys to go into War Games with, I think I'd pick Ever-Rise.
Ever-Rise? Yeah, Ever-Rise.
Us two and Ever-Rise.
Me and you and Ever-Rise.
What a fucking team that'd be. You're starting first and going the full 25 minutes. You probably got the best cardio out of the team.
Yeah, probably. I could go. I used to be a fighter.
Yeah?
Look, right there.
Yeah.
I have a red belt. Would you like to see all my karate belts? They're in there. I have my gi in there as well.
I've seen you in a cane suit. This is...
Yeah, you saw something no human's eye should see.
Main event time. Peter Dune taking on Kyle O'Reilly for the War Games advantage. Bruiserweight goes after the left hand of O'Reilly early. I thought it was goofy how, like, Undisputed Era and... Lorcan and Burch run like fucking platforms.
It was goofy.
So
was
fucking goofy. Dunn suplexed O'Reilly through a ladder for a break spot.
First of all, it looked fucking fantastic. Second of all, why was it the fucking commercial spot? Why was it like dead in the middle of the match?
I don't know. But anyway. Come back from commercial. They're still brawling. Dunn goes to the bitter end, but O'Reilly counters into a guillotine. However, the Bruiserweight turns it around and sends Kyle O'Reilly knee first into a ladder. Both men were limping. Dunn broke O'Reilly's fingers, but O'Reilly hit his rebound clothesline that knocked down the ladder. Dunn got a steel chair. He hit the bitter end on the guardrail. O'Reilly recovered. He knocked Dunn off the ladder, but a hooded man knocked O'Reilly off the ladder, and Dunn got the briefcase and stood tall. Of course, earlier in the show, Pat McAfee cut a video saying that he could not be there and he wishes he could. And I think we're supposed to get the impression that this man was Pat McAfee.
Yeah.
So.
As you explained to me. But this was phenomenal.
Heels get the win and heels get the advantage. Who would ever guessed it?
This was phenomenal.
Just like we'll all be shocked next week when the heels get the advantage in the other War Games.
Yep.
Although, I'd like to see the babyfaces get the advantage once, just to see how they could book it.
Yeah, I'd like to see how it would go.
I mean, last year would have been the perfect time to do it when Dakota turned on Tegan. Like, that would have been a way where the babyfaces could have the advantage, and it still would have,
It would have made sense.
But they still gave the heels the advantage, yeah, even in
the
that
The heels
match.
Are always going to have
the advantage. I know, but I don't know. Whatever.
It's just one of those wrestling things.
MVP times.
You have to carry about. AEW, who you got?
I'm going Taz.
You know, his just strength is amazing.
I like that segment. I don't care what you say.
It was fine, but it was funny that he
cut a great promo.
Yeah. I'm going to go John Silver. Presses me every week. Presses me more every week.
And he's hungry.
For NXT, I'm going to go Kevin Owens.
Really?
He was different.
So you hated the Kevin Owens show, which is like his biggest part of the show. I don't know.
And, you know, I don't think he was bad during that show. I don't know why they did it.
Well, I know why they did it. They set up the triple threat. That's why they did it.
My overall is O'Reilly for taking that bump.
Yeah.
Because that was insane. How about you?
So I'm going Taz. I'm going Tony Storm. And I'm going Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly because Pete Dunne also took some brutal bumps. I think he has to get some credit.
Match of the night.
Better show, I guess, NXT. Neither show really did anything for me, honestly, besides the ladder match and the tag match in AEW. The rest of it was just kind of all there.
Yeah, it's just a plain wrestling show. I'm going to say, for the same reasons, the highs on NXT were better than the highs on AEW. So I'm going NXT.
So speaking of NXT, we will stay with it, and we will hop right in to talking about NXT TakeOver War Games. Of course, it is this Sunday, December 6th, live on the WWE Network. So as of this time, we have four matches announced. So let us start.
That might be it.
Maybe they'll add one more. I don't know what it would be. Maybe a Cruiserweight title match of some kind.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Because I don't think Balor's... Oh, Thatcher and Ciampa will probably be added.
Okay.
That'd be my assumption.
That'd be sick.
Yeah. Because I don't think Balor's cleared to wrestle yet. So no, I think him and Kushida still have to wait a little longer. So we will talk about the four matches that we know are on the card and give our thoughts and who we think will go over. Cameron Grimes taking on Dexter Lumis in a strap match. We got why.
Grimes, he's got to go over.
Dexter Lumis, because Grimes never wins. Triple threat match for the North American Championship. Leon Ruff taking on Johnny Gargano, taking on Damian Priest. Who you got and why?
Ruff sneaks one. You convince me.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they hit, like, Priest and Gargano hit, like, double super kicks.
Yeah.
And then just Ruff pins Gargano.
Yeah.
And then he acts like he...
Hopefully he pins Gargano.
I don't think they'll pin Priest.
No, I think they're smarter than that.
Yeah.
But they surprised me before.
I will say, I could also see Damian Priest getting his title back. The only one I don't see winning this match is Gargano.
Yeah, it's one or two. Yeah. One or the other.
So let's go to Team Shotzi. Now, Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon are the only two confirmed members, but based on what happened in NXT, it seems fairly obvious that Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai will be the other two. And they're taking on Team Candice, which is Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and Tony Storm. Who you got and why?
I'm going the baby faces. Team Shotzi.
I'm going the heels just because we got to set up Io's next challenger somehow.
Okay, but I'm still going the baby faces for a reason we'll talk about in just a few seconds.
Well, I'm going to talk about it now.
Yeah, I said a few seconds.
Oh, because you're picking the heels in the other match. That's probably the reason, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
Then I'll tell you what I think is going to happen in this match.
Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick. Well, then again, both babyface teams won last year.
Yeah, but I will tell you what I think is going to happen.
All right, let's relax. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, and Bobby Fish take on Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, Oney Lorcan in a War Games match as well.
I'm going with the heels because okay. I think Roddy's turning.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get that impression, too, that somebody's turning.
Yeah, I think if they're going to do it, it has to happen here. It has to happen. It sucks there's no fans to react, but it has to happen.
There will be fans. NXT is fans.
You're right. You're right. But you know what I mean. There's not an arena full of people.
Yeah.
I think it's time for Roddy to turn.
Well, the original rumor was that Roddy and Bobby would be heels, and Kyle and Adam would be faces. So it seems like if they go that way, Bobby Fish would also be turning with him.
Maybe Roddy would only turn tomorrow and Fish would join him Wednesday.
I don't know. I don't.
But I think definitely Roddy's turning tomorrow.
Just watching that promo they cut, it just seemed like just the looks that Bobby and Roddy were even giving them. I don't know. Like, the Undisputed Era should win this match, but I think there's... You know what? I'm going to go that Undisputed Era wins the match, and they turn after the match. I think the turn's happening.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think the turn's happening, but...
You know what? That's likely. Fuck.
Because I just don't think that Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan are, like, top guy. You know what I mean? I don't think they should be beating the Undisputed Era. Even, I mean, I guess if the Undisputed Era is ending, it doesn't really matter if they beat the Undisputed Era.
Well, here's the thing. What if they add a tag match, they lose the straps, and then Bobby and Roddy turn because McAfee doesn't lose or some shit, and they kick them out of the group?
It's possible.
And Bobby and Riley, or Bobby and Riley, are the new tag team in that faction.
But I think also, I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure McAfee is in, I think his run's going to be over after this match. For now.
Hopefully he doesn't take a big bump.
For now.
Hopefully he doesn't take a big bump.
Because the dude is like a busy motherfucker.
He has 100 things on his plate.
I think he'll have a lot of these mini runs. Like,
yeah.
But I think for now, his run's going to be over.
Well, yeah, the guy's going to do a radio show every day.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, but I don't know. I think the heels are winning. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, should be a good show. War Games is always fun.
The three they've had so far are really good shows. So I'm looking forward to it. And also, it's been a while since we had an NXT TakeOver. It probably has, but it feels like it's been a while.
It's been a month. We had TakeOver 31 in October.
Yeah, I love TakeOvers. I think they're the best wrestling shows on Earth, and I'm looking forward to having one.
Yeah, so that's NXT. That's NXT TakeOver War Games. Coming up next, we will talk about the career of The Undertaker. So stay tuned. I'm sure it'll be fun. So, like I said, stick around. So, a few weeks ago at Survivor Series, we witnessed The Undertaker's final farewell. So I guess we'll just start, give our thoughts on the whole segment, talk about some of our favorite Undertaker moments, talk about what we think his legacy in the business will go down as, and what we think the future of The Undertaker is. So I guess let's start with the whole segment itself. They brought out some of Undertaker's closest friends and rivals, including Shane McMahon. I almost said Los Pericos, but unfortunately it was only Savio. Savio, the Godwins, Triple H, Kane in full gear for some reason, JBL.
Oh my God, that's awesome. It's so funny.
It had to be a rib.
It had to be.
But like, why would he believe everyone else would be in full gear? Like, I don't...
But he was sitting there with JBL in the locker room.
Maybe he just thought, I have to be Kane if I'm doing this for
TV. Yeah, you know what? That's probably it. The story's not Undertaker and Glenn Jacobs. The story is Undertaker and Kane. You know what? That's probably it.
Yeah.
That's probably it. I will like to think the other way.
Oh, me too.
But
I love the picture of like all of them on the one side of the ring and he's just standing looking at all. Because at that moment, it's like, God damn. Are those good at the Godwins, man? Look at the. Couldn't believe those two fuckers showed up. I know they're close friends with him.
I didn't know they were both still alive. Are the Godwins? Barry Darso and...
No, I don't think Barry Darso is not one of the Godwins.
Are you sure?
Yes. Demolition Smash is not one of the Godwins.
Well, we're going to find out. Go ahead.
Barry Darso!
Who else was there, Tony?
I can't believe you think Barry Darso is one of the Godwins.
Okay, well, who else was there, Tony?
Well, Vince was there.
Vince was there, and we'll talk about that in just a second.
Vince and his makeup.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, then Undertaker came out after Vince said some words.
Vince does not look good.
No.
So I think Vince is trying to, you know, not sleep and work out three times a day.
He's still trying to be Vince.
Yeah, he can't. He needs to take a break. If that's what's booking the show, a lot makes sense.
Yeah.
He's not Vince anymore, and it's sad to see.
And, like, he's dealing with the stress of falling ratings and a rival company rising up. Like, the dude doesn't need this much stress at 75.
I meant Dennis Knight. I didn't mean Barry Darso. He was Midian.
Yeah, I could have told you it was Midian.
I was thinking of Dennis Knight.
Knight and Canterbury.
Yeah, Mark Canterbury.
Mark Canterbury. But, which is, if your name's Mark Canterbury, why is that not your wrestling name?
That's a great name.
It's just like Peter England.
He was Canterbury for a lot of his career.
Those are going to be the new Godwins to me. Peter England and Mark Canterbury. They're the new Godwins.
That's fine with me. But Vince, you did not look good. Please, for God's sakes, fucking sleep.
So an Undertaker came out. By the way, Vince was it was baffling to see. Vince was like a wreck saying goodbye to this character.
Yeah, I mean, but it's in several Vince ways, though. Like, one, him and Mark are just... Yeah. The closest friends. He's probably his most loyal employee ever.
Yeah, he had plenty of chances to leave, never left.
Yeah.
Not to mention,
it's Vince's greatest creation.
Even when the whole StarCast thing came up, Vince, like, told him why he didn't want him doing it, and Taker understood and pulled out, which is baffling because he would have made a lot of money signing at StarCast.
Yeah. If I was there, I would have paid however much to get it.
He would have made so much money at StarCast. And Vince talked to him. He said, hey, this is like our rival now. I don't want you doing this. And Taker didn't do it.
It was just...
Even in 2019, he passed up on all that money to be loyal to a fault.
Yeah, and God damn it, I respect the fuck out of that.
Yeah.
I respect it. He... So more about the segment.
Feel bad for Conrad, though.
Booker T was there.
Booker T was there.
Just mainly BSK, right?
BSK and some of his greatest rivals.
Yeah, and friends.
Yeah. I think BSK covers the friends part.
Yeah. I mean, Shane's not in BSK, and I know Shane and him are ridiculously close.
I'd consider him more on the rival side, just because of, you know, WrestleMania Dallas, biggest WrestleMania ever.
Yeah. Huge.
Big.
Fuck that stadium. But,
It's the second best stadium in the league.
I don't like the Star. I can't say that as an Eagles fan. You know that. But,
The Link's a piece of shit.
Fuck you. Link's amazing.
Link is not a... Link's... It's beautiful. It's a stadium.
It is a stadium. But more on The Undertaker, because here we're talking about. He's just... The segment was okay, and I tell you what, the cutting the promo, I was crying, because I'm a crier, because I'm a bitch. But, I'm a horrible movie crier.
I'd been laughing at you if I was here.
Horrible movie crier. And, he was good. Time to let the rest of him take a rest in peace. I liked that line. I was fine.
Then Paul came up.
The hologram of Paul Bearer.
That's really got you.
Was so tasteful. It was so
well done. It was great.
It was well done. And it was because he's 1-1. That they are together. They're together. They're 1-1 together.
And like, you know, and you know that, you know that he would have loved to have been there.
Oh, yeah. And I have so much more respect for him after watching The Mortician.
Yeah.
Like, you really don't think, like, when you think great managers, like, he wasn't in my top five. But he is. He was that good as a manager. They had a lot of Percy Pringle stuff, though.
On that.
And he was good then.
Like, Paul Bearer was probably what he's most known for. But, like, territory pre-Paul Bearer days, yeah. Percy Pringle was...
And he managed a lot of people. Yeah. He was, like, Rick Rude's first manager. He was Sid's first manager. He was just he's a Jimmy Hart of the South.
He managed The Undertaker as Texas Red before he was The Undertaker.
And before he was Paul Bearer.
Yeah, well, obviously, because The Undertaker was The Undertaker before Paul Bearer is Paul Bearer.
Yeah, well, that's... I just adding to the thing, but I just thought the segment was very well done. It's a shame that people weren't there.
That's the biggest takeaway, and they wanted to do it on that day. 30 years to the day of his WWE debut. It makes sense why they wanted to do it that day, but I kind of hope that, you know... So I'm sure WWE's going to put them in their goofy Hall of Fame one day. I hope he could... Not if there's not going to be people. You don't waste it. That's my whole thing. Like, he deserves a proper send-off in front of people. And it's not like the dude's going away forever. I'm sure whenever they have Raw reunion
he's just
SmackDown 25 years, whatever year that lands out, if he's still with us, hopefully.
Or 2025, so two more years. I hope he's fucking still here.
2025 is not in two more years. It's 2020, bud.
Five more years. I hope he's still here.
2025, 2 years.
Time doesn't matter anymore.
God, ain't that the truth.
But, it's not like this is the end. This was the end so we could start a new part of his career.
Yeah.
Like, he has wines and he's on fucking Hot Ones and...
Well, all that still has The Undertaker. I think it's more so if he wants to fucking have a role in the movie now, he can because he's not The Undertaker anymore.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's more or less.
Yeah.
But I just thought the whole thing was very, very tastefully done. And I don't know, what do you think?
I thought it was, like I said, it was perfect with the exception of there wasn't people.
I would like to hear that Undertaker chant.
Well, you did hear it because they had a fucking pipe in fake crowd noise.
I hated that moment, but
was so unnecessary.
We were at a couple shows where the Undertaker chant was going on.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. There's nothing like it. But...
Have you seen... I don't think... You've never had to see, like, a proper Undertaker WrestleMania entrance, have you?
No.
That's a shame.
It is.
I saw two of them, and man, like... It legitimately gives you the chills.
Yeah, I never got to see it. Never got to see an Undertaker WrestleMania.
And you missed him on Raw, too, because you were sleeping.
No, he woke me up.
That's...
The gong woke me up. I saw the entire entrance. You do not get at me for sleeping at Raw, because you were too.
I was not sleeping at Raw.
And we had a rough night.
We did. I won't debate that.
We stood out in the rain, waiting for... Think of how we're going to get 8 miles across the Manhattan Bridge to get to our hotel.
That's the most I've ever paid for an Uber in my life.
Yeah, it was
like $145.
And then we waited for McDonald's for hours.
It's the only thing
I ate a cold quarter pounder. It was just... What a nightmare.
It was.
After a good night.
Good times.
But Jesus Christ, he's gone. He's the most constant thing of my life. That's of my entertainment life. Good.
Okay, I'm glad you put a qualifier on there.
On my entertainment, he was the most constant thing. He debuted in 1990 and had the greatest career there ever was.
Yeah, I think like
he's not the best wrestler ever.
He's the best WWE superstar ever.
Yeah, no one anywhere had a better career than him. I'll die on that hill.
No, oh, yeah, I agree.
No one anywhere. You mean Liger? Maybe he's the only one that comes close.
Yeah,
but I still think Taker blows him out of the way. He's the best character, and this is a very underrated part of wrestling. See, no one else could have done that character.
I'm also I agree 100%, but I'm also sure going back to the Liger thing. I'm not sure that's a fair comparison just because we're not ingrained in the Japanese culture. You know what I mean?
No, but I don't think... But we're not ingrained in Japanese culture, but they cared more about Undertaker than we do about Liger.
That's fair.
Yeah, so I mean...
But they also care more about wrestling than we do. Like, as a population, I guarantee there are, like... Obviously, there's probably more wrestling fans in the U.S. because we have, a population that's, 10 times the size of them. But, if we, what's the word I'm looking for? Per population density, there's probably more wrestling fans.
Per capita?
Per capita. There's probably more wrestling fans in Japan than there are in the U.S.
Yeah.
So obviously more people in Japan care about The Undertaker than more people in America care about Liger.
Yeah. That's
so fair. I just don't think it's a fair comparison. And I'm not trying to argue with you because this is irrelevant to the conversation. I just think it's a comparison that can't be made. But anyway, yeah, Undertaker, the greatest career of... he perfectly defined what it meant to be a WWE superstar. Like you said, he wasn't the best wrestler, but he's the only man that could have played that character. He dedicated himself to the character. If you saw him at the supermarket, he was the Undertaker. He was wearing all black. I mean, he wasn't wearing fucking makeup and a tie, but he's wearing all black. He tried being the Undertaker 24/7. And the character adjusted. Some point, he rode a motorcycle.
Even when he went to the Badass, it was still the Undertaker.
Yeah.
You knew it was the Undertaker.
And it allowed him to have a little more creative freedom. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's just that good. He couldn't... If they didn't do that, he would not have lasted.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
No, he said that. He's not on the record. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said it saved him because he couldn't just be the Undertaker 24/7. He had to...
He got to show how good he could be.
And in the Attitude Era, because I think this was the first Stone Cold sessions, not the second one that just came out. But he said, you got The Rock and Austin cutting all these, great promos, and, The Undertaker really can't do that because of the nature of his character. So when he went to the American Badass, he was able to cut those promos with The Rock and Austin and it be believable. So, yeah, you're very much right in saying the Badass did save him because he would have gotten eaten alive in that Attitude Era.
Yeah, and that was... That's when he introduced The Last Ride.
Yeah.
Which was a great move.
Great move.
But even...
One of my favorite segments is him trying to teach Kane how to do The Last Ride.
Yeah.
Which apparently was a shoot because Kane legitimately did not know how to do it.
Yeah, they were talking... That was on Brothers of Destruction, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I just thought it was an angle all these years, but it was a shoot. He didn't know how to do The Last Ride.
Because now we know why you grabbed the tights.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about WrestleMania.
Okay.
I will run through his 24 WrestleMania opponents.
Ooh, this would be a good quiz.
His 24, not opponents, 24 WrestleMania matches.
Let me try running the gauntlet.
I mean, we'll go through. I don't have them in order. I just have them up.
I could go in order.
Okay.
So we got Jimmy Snuka at 7.
Yeah.
Jake Roberts at 8.
Yeah.
Gonzalez at 9.
Yeah.
Took 10 off.
Yeah.
Bundy at 11. Diesel at 12, Sid at 13, Kane at 14, Boss Man at 15, took 16 off, Triple H at 17, Flair at 18, Big Show and A-Train at 19, Kane at 20, Orton at 21, Henry at 22, Batista at 23, Edge at 24, Michaels 25 and 26, Hunter 27, 28, Punk 29, Brock 30, Bray Wyatt 31, Shane 32, Roman 33, Cena 34, took 35 off, and then of course Bray at 36.
AJ,
yeah. Boneyard.
Yeah, but just think about the talent that's there.
Yeah.
How you put them over by beating them, which is a whole different...
Except for Roman and Brock.
Yeah, but that Roman match is sad to watch.
It is.
He acknowledges that, but the streak was a thing. It was a legitimate thing for a while. It gave him life, and what's your favorite of the matches?
Shawn, easily.
25?
Yeah. And 26 is probably my second favorite, with End of an Era coming close. See, I'm kind of on the boat.
Match.
The what?
I like the Flair match.
Yeah, Flair match is good. Especially knowing the backstory about how unconfident Flair was and how that match restored his confidence.
He was honored to work with Taker.
Yeah. So I don't know if you watched the Stone Cold Sessions, but they said he had a choice between Rob Van Dam and Flair, and Vince was like gobsmacked when he chose Flair.
Oh, yeah. Why would he not work? He's from the South and he's a wrestling fan. Why would he not want to work with Flair?
Exactly. But Vince is like, what? But it's Flair. Like, you know, Rob Van Dam's this young guy that he got this great match with, but Taker's like, I don't give a shit. It's Flair.
And he had a great match with Flair.
He did. He did.
What's your favorite all-time Undertaker match?
Probably Shawn Michaels, Bad Blood, Hell in a Cell.
Kane 20 at 20.
Yeah, just, oh, that's your favorite?
I love that. Mainly not for the match.
Oh, yeah, the match sucked. But
the match wasn't good, but the return of the return of the dead man.
With Paul Bearer.
Yeah.
In the garden.
Was just outstanding. And the monks. And
they're not monks.
They're monks.
We've been over this so many goddamn times. They are monks.
Are they monks? I'm putting a poll on our Twitter.
They're druids.
They're monks.
He has never called them monks.
He's never called them druids
either. Yes, he has. Are you kidding me? Google Undertaker monks. Guarantee you nothing comes up. I'll Google Undertaker druids right now.
Okay. We're going to talk for a little bit, but I just think...
Come on, dude.
That's your favorite all-time match, not just Mania?
What?
Shawn?
My all-time favorite match is Shawn Bad Blood Hell in a Cell. My favorite Mania match is Shawn at Mania 25.
Okay. The Bad Blood match is great, and there's something we didn't talk about yet. He's the one that threw Foley off the cage.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He's the one that, he's the one that threw Foley off the cage. Maybe the most memorable night in wrestling history, because the world changed after that. Foley's life changed, Taker's life changed.
Foley's life changed, all right.
And we're talking about how good he was in the ring. He was even more important backstage.
Yeah, he was the locker room leader. He was, like, I love the story of, you know what? You Google Undertaker monks, and apparently he had a song called Monks of the Dark Side, but it was for him and not the druids. That's bizarre. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, there was the legendary story where at WrestleMania 14, when Shawn was fucked up, there were some concerns that he might not do the JOB to Austin. And Undertaker, reportedly, who he'd since confirmed this story, sat in Gorilla, taping up his fists, and he said if Shawn got out of line, there would have been a legitimate run-in, which is wild.
Could you imagine?
No.
He was the judge for Wrestler's Court.
He's also the guy who, after the screw job, made Vince go down and talk to Brett, so he's responsible for Vince getting knocked the fuck out. But he told Vince, like, you better go fucking talk to this guy, like, right now, because you just fucked him.
Yeah.
He's kind of, like you said, he was the most loyal guy, so it made sense that he was the locker room leader.
He's just, what's your favorite iteration of the Undertaker?
That's tough.
I have to go Return of the Dead Man.
Me too, just kind of like, because that was like my peak years of watching wrestling.
Nothing to do with me either. I think, well, that too for me, but I think objectively he had, I mean.
That was his best in-ring work.
It was his best in-ring work with the aura of the greatest character ever.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I think, like, my favorite Undertaker is kind of like Ministry Undertaker. Just kind of that was, like, really badass. But I didn't really grow up watching it, so yeah. I don't think I could pick that.
No, I don't think you could either.
So I think it has to be, like.
It's badass.
It has to be, like, Ruthless Aggression 04 to 2009 Undertaker. Like, that five-year period.
Where he was just lighting it up with everybody.
Yeah.
Batista, Edge.
Kurt Angle, No Way Out 2006. Great match.
He made the ring go down.
That was Royal Rumble. That's what set that match up.
But yeah. I love that because he came out with a fucking horse.
Yeah.
They bought a stallion for no reason.
And Ambrose is one of the druids.
Yeah. No. He wasn't one of the druids. He was one of the monks.
Don't call John Moxley a monk.
He's a monk.
Moxley. If you look monk up in the dictionary, John Moxley does not fit that descriptor.
He doesn't fit a druid either.
Oh, shit. He's dark as hell. Monks are about peace.
Oh, my God. I don't like this at all. I don't like this. We have to solve this once and for all.
No, there's nothing to solve.
There is things to solve.
They're fucking called druids.
7 votes. All for druids.
Because who the fuck calls them monks?
I call them monks. They're the same thing. But, oh, good God almighty. But, okay, let's start wrapping this up a little bit. What's his legacy?
I think I said he's the greatest character that ever exists in the WWE. He had the best WWE career of all time. I think he will go down as probably the greatest to ever do it within the walls of Stamford, Connecticut.
Yeah, probably. I think he's the bar.
No, that's Sheamus and Cesaro.
That is. But I think he's the bar. I think Cena called him the bar before. The bar for respect. The bar for just talent. I mean, Triple H, Shetty, remember, comes into the... before End of a Mary, remember, coming into the locker room where a guy was taping up his ribs so he can wrestle that night and has lost the entire part of his face and the sacrifice. He married Michelle McCool, which is cool.
I like you just threw that in there.
Yeah, she's not enough for him. But
just open up your eyes and see.
Yeah, but I think his legacy is the greatest ever and unfortunately unattainable anymore. Well, no, there'll never be another someone ever again like The Undertaker.
And like, he was kind of like... he was born in an era of goofy characters, and, like, Tugboat didn't last, but The Undertaker did.
Yeah, but, like, I guess the whole package. It was Paul Bearer.
Yeah.
And another part of his legacy, which we haven't mentioned yet, is the number of people he made, especially utilizing the greatest story in wrestling history.
Yeah.
And making Glenn Jacobs, who was a failed dentist and a failed fake Kevin Nash.
And a Christmas creature.
And a Christmas creature.
And a Unabomb.
And Unabomb. And Ted Kuczynski. And Bruiser Mastino.
Or Bruiser Mastino.
Mastino. One of the two.
One of the two.
But, yeah. And turned Glenn into a world heavyweight main event wrestler for 15 years.
Yeah, he did.
Like, Kane was as top as tippy top as you can
but
get.
But I don't think we could necessarily give Undertaker credit for that. I think Glenn has to get the credit for that.
Oh, I think Taker gets at least half the credit. I think Glenn will tell you that.
Yeah, but you made it
without that stare down. That stare down at Bad Blood.
But you didn't make it sound that way.
Well, that's what I meant to say.
You made it sound like Mark Calloway just made him a star.
No, but he's definitely responsible.
Yeah, he definitely deserves some of the credit. Yeah. But I mean, Kane. What's your favorite Kane? My favorite Kane has nothing to do with Undertaker. My favorite Kane is 2003 Just Unmasked Psychopath Kane.
With the chains?
Yes.
I like original Kane.
So do I. But
I can't. But that just, he's without Taker, that doesn't happen.
That's true.
Glenn goes to be a senator or the president or something.
But I just think the reason why Glenn needs to get the credit for that is that's supposed to be a one off thing, and he was supposed to be done after the Taker match, and he stuck around for another 20 years.
Yeah, it's just the mark he made, his footprint on the business is more than we can ever measure.
Yeah. And I think...
and think about it, though. There's probably a whole bunch of superstars that came up, you know, 2010, 2020, to now, that he's the reason, or at least part of it, they became wrestlers.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, like, and I'm sure meeting him is fantastic. And look at the greats he brushed with. The greats he brushed with over the years. He outlived them all. He outlasted them all. Longest career ever. Best career in wrestling history. Maybe the best career in entertainment history.
That's bold.
I think there's a case for it.
You could probably make the case for it.
But what I'm interested in asking you is, where does Mark Calloway go from here?
Hopefully he just lives his life and enjoys his... enjoys what he has left. And
do you think he gives... I mean, he's given back so much just from countless surgeries and shit like that. Not to sound like a sap, but do you think he trains? Do you think he maybe lectures at the Performance Center once in a while?
I could see a thing where, like, you know, Hunter asked him to go down and, like, work with the bigger guys, and he'd probably do it. I don't think he ever does it on a full-time basis. He seems to enjoy living in Texas. I don't think he'd want to move to Florida. You know, he's got kids he probably wants to spend time with. He's got Michelle. I don't know. I think he just continues making sporadic appearances for WWE, you know, whenever the occasion calls for it. And I think he just lives his life. Maybe takes some more outside opportunities that he turned down for years because he didn't want to ruin the mystique.
Yeah, I think that's where his focus would be now.
I just think...
he has a fucking wine now.
That's the WWE thing. They just put his name on it. It's not like it's his wine.
It's Undertaker Cabernet Sauvignon. Yeah.
The Ultimate Warrior is a wine too, and he's dead, so that's even more impressive. I just think he's got all his chips now, and he just cashes them in and enjoys the rest of his life.
He's made a lot of money. He's going to make a lot more.
I mean, he just signed a 15-year contract last year. He's still getting paid by Vince for at least another 14 years.
I think he made $17 million last year.
It's ridiculous.
And it's nothing to be thinking.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying, like, it's,
you know,
wild.
Something cool?
What?
You saw his last WrestleMania match.
No one saw his last WrestleMania match.
You saw his last one before...
Well, yeah, not counting Boneyard.
Yeah. His last match. I'm not counting the Boneyard as a match. I loved it. I really loved it. I'm not counting that as Undertaker.
Oh, so you're one of those guys.
No, it is. You're one of those guys.
It's a match.
You're right. I loved it, but in his last WrestleMania...
I get what you're trying to say. I'm giving you a hard time.
You saw. You give me a hard time all day.
Yeah.
You saw.
I did.
We saw his last wrestling match.
We did. No.
In front of people.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. I think in front of people. We saw his last appearance.
Saw his last appearance and his last match.
I think, did he not wrestle that? Maybe he didn't wrestle that Saudi show.
No, he didn't. Oh, well, he didn't wrestle. He came and tombstoned AJ.
That was a match. He won the gauntlet. It was a match.
Okay. We saw his last goddamn wrestling match in the United States of America.
We did see that, yes.
And Extreme Rules in Philadelphia.
We did.
And it was a great match.
But how dare you not call the Tariq Mountain Trophy not a match?
It's a glorious trophy.
It's a great trophy. I'm sure it's right on his mantle.
Next to that awful title, yes.
You want that on NCAA title.
I really do.
I don't know why.
What belt did he hold originally?
What, like world title?
Winged Eagle, right?
Yeah.
He held the Winged Eagle.
And he won the title like a year after coming in the company.
Yeah, against Hogan, I believe.
Yeah, against Hogan.
And then he's only a 5-time champion, I believe, right?
But he's one of those guys you never need.
No, he can't be walking around, here's our champion. And dong, he's fucking a pale guy.
Although they did put him on fucking Regis and Kathy Lee a lot, and it had to be a rib.
I actually think he was good friends with Regis.
Like, he talked about how much he hated doing that show because he said to fucking sit there while Paul talked. That had to be a rib.
Well, Regis was a gigantic wrestling fan, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But, oh, just thank you, Undertaker. We saw him rip the cage off the fucking... We saw him wrestle Mark Henry in a cage. I did, at least. I'm sure you were there, too.
No, Mark Henry... That was Batista and Ray versus Eminem. And then Mark Henry ripped the door off the cage.
Yeah, but then I saw him wrestle in a cage here one time, too. Taker. Maybe against Chavo?
I don't know,
but that's when I saw the full entrance, and that was awesome. But thank you, Undertaker. We're not going to wrap up any more time.
I think we do have to ask the question, although I think we're both going to have the answer. Does he ever wrestle again?
No.
Okay, me too.
I think they wouldn't have done it if he had plans to. I think he's finally come to terms that he's not the 2005 Mark Calloway. I mean, are you counting like a Rumble appearance in 5 years?
Yes.
He'll wrestle in the Rumble again.
You think so?
Yeah. If he's healthy enough to take a bump over the top rope.
I don't know. I just don't see it. I think he's...
I hope he doesn't.
I could also see the fucking Emperor of Saudi Arabia throwing a gigantic bag at him.
Yeah.
They threw a bag big enough to talk Shawn Michaels at retirement.
Yeah.
And you know how many, like, AJ Styles begged Shawn Michaels to wrestle him? Fucking begged him. And he said no. So that Saudi bag had to be pretty big.
$3 million, I believe it was.
Sean sold his soul for $3 million. That's disappointing.
I'd sell my soul for $3 million.
If I had as much money as he already did, I probably wouldn't. If I, like, I'm making the amount of money I would, I do. I am now, I'd sell my soul for $1 million. Fuck. But disappointing.
We'll say he's done wrestling in the States.
I think he's done wrestling just based on Vince's reaction.
Yeah, it was never like that.
Vince wouldn't have reacted the way he reacted.
Vince wouldn't be crying through inches of makeup if he didn't.
Yeah, I think that was the telltale sign.
But I'm going to go watch a Yokozuna Undertaker casket match today.
Oh, and he ascends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because I'm more for Yoko, because people don't give Yoko the credit he deserves.
No, Yoko is great. It's a shame his career went down the way it did with... him refusing to lose the weight and
then dying.
I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, but honestly, yeah. But Yoko, like when he was 570 pounds, motherfucker could move.
And apparently he was light as a feather on that bonsai drop, which is...
Yeah, I guess I know somebody that recently, I've told you this, that did self-defense training with Del Wilkes, the original Patriot.
Which is baffling. Which is a baffling...
Who apparently is around here, so we got to find him.
What? I thought he was from, like, South Carolina.
I don't know, but he trained around here with Del Wilkes. I don't know if he travels.
Well, I think they those gimmicks travel.
Yeah.
I think that's how it goes.
And said that we're talking about Yokozuna because somebody asked about him. And he said he could be 150 pounds if he wanted to be.
Yeah.
He could be all 600 or he could be 150.
Which is a skill in and of itself.
Yeah. Andre had that, too.
Yeah.
But enough about Yokozuna. We'll do a Yokozuna episode eventually because I like Yokozuna.
Yeah.
But Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week with the takeover review and whatever happens during the week.
Yeah, so see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Peace.